a great picture for what I'm going to talk about, which is the effect of normative feedback on college students' perceptions of sexual behaviors. Brief overview of what I'm going to be talking about today. I'm going to give you a problem overview, which I'm going to do very briefly since the previous presenters have done a great job at already doing that for me. Some background information, talk about the study design and methods, and the results and discussion application. So college students are more frequently engaging in risky sexual behaviors, including first intercourse at younger ages, having multiple sexual partners, and using drugs and alcohol in combination with sexual experiences, and not using condoms to protect from STIs. Of a student surveyed in a survey conducted by the CDC, 86% reported engaging in vaginal intercourse during their lifetime, and of these students, more than one-third reported having more than six sexual partners. As we know, engaging in risky sexual behaviors can lead to contracting several types of STIs, including HIV. There are an estimated 19 million new cases of STIs yearly, with 50% of these cases in college-age students or between ages 15 and 24. 50% of all new HIV cases are diagnosed in individuals ages 25 and younger. This data suggests that college students are an at-risk population. There are multiple health consequences associated with contracting an STI, including types of cancers, pelvic inflammatory disease, and infertility in both men and women. Economic costs include costs of prescriptions, hospitalizations, and doctor visits. In 1994, it was estimated that $16 billion was spent on direct costs associated with STIs. However, despite receiving ample education and knowing the costs and consequences of these behaviors, college students are continually engaging in risky behaviors. Therefore, it seems based on these statistics that our current prevention programs are not working. To that end, literature suggested that college students' behaviors are directly influenced by social influence. This is a process where individuals consider the behaviors and beliefs of their peers and determine their own behaviors and beliefs. And this leads us to the social norm approach, which is where behaviors are thought to be influenced by perceptions of the social norm. So what we think is popular, what we think our peers are doing, influences our own behaviors. And this is most commonly applied to alcohol consumption, where the perception that college students drink a great deal is leading to an increase in the behavior. However, as we know, perceptions of the social norm are often incorrect or misperceptions. Such misperceptions are thought to contribute to the development and maintenance of risky behaviors, including binge drinking, illicit drug use, and risky sexual behaviors. The false consensus effect is a type of social norm misperception that describes a form of attribution error where individuals perceive their own attitudes and behaviors as relatively common. For example, college students who drink tend to overestimate the number of other college students are drinking. So what I'm doing must be popular and everybody else is doing it. So the implication for the false consensus effect with regards to risky sexual behaviors is this idea that we think that if we're doing this, everybody else is doing it. And this is providing a sense of validation and correctness, and it has been shown to lead to the maintenance of risky behaviors. In fact, one study found that men who engage in risky sexual behaviors tend to perceive these behaviors as common. This led to a sense of validation and a sense of correctness, and led to the maintenance and even an increase in risky behaviors. Therefore, to reduce risky behaviors, we need to look at rectifying these misperceptions. Normative feedback has become really popular on college campuses and consists of providing accurate or conservative estimates regarding the prevalence of risky health behaviors among a specific peer group, such as college students. Normative feedback is thought to counteract the false consensus effect by correcting these commonly held misperceptions. It's been shown to reduce drinking behavior among college students, and it has been thought to be effective with reducing risky sexual behaviors. However, only one study has looked at normative feedback with regards to risky sexual behaviors. So the application of this idea of the social norm theory and normative feedback to risky sexual behaviors is that we want to know, can normative feedback change perceptions? Can we change these commonly misheld perceptions? And will this in turn change behaviors leading to a reduction in STIs and allowing us to implement new and innovative prevention programs. Therefore, the purpose of the current study was to examine the effects of normative feedback on the perceptions of college students. The study examined college students' perceptions of peer behaviors and implemented a quasi-experimental pretest, post-test, no-control group design. There are two hypotheses which really can be combined into one, and basically it is that at baseline we're going to see these misperceptions. So we're going to see a false consensus effect, or individuals engaging in the behavior are going to be more likely to think their peers are engaging in the behavior. However, after exposure to the normative feedback, which would be at time two or time three, we're not going to see this false consensus effect anymore. This kind of just gives you an overview of what we expect, and that's at baseline, they're going to get a questionnaire that assesses their perceptions. We would expect a false consensus effect at this point. However, after exposure to the normative feedback, we're not going to expect a false consensus effect. So really quickly, there's two sessions. During session one, participants completed the first health behavior survey. They then did a set of math problems, and this was really just a distractor item, so they weren't focusing on these health behaviors and all these questions about sex. They're then introduced to normative feedback, completed another set of math problems, and then completed another health behavior survey. Session two occurred 2 weeks later, give or take a few days, and they completed the health behavior survey for the third time. The health behavior questionnaire was modeled after the CDC's 1995 College Student Risky Behavior Questionnaire. It consists of 41 questions with 5 identification questions, and this was just to maintain confidentiality. We didn't ask any names, so to match them all up, we had just 5 random questions, such as, what is your favorite movie? It also assesses for demographics such as age, gender, and race. The sexual behaviors included were vaginal sex, anal sex, and oral sex. We included other health behaviors just to reduce a response bias. So the manipulation was the normative feedback component, which was a health behavior pamphlet. It was created specifically for the study and consisted of conservative norms for several health behaviors. Again, just to reduce the response bias, we included other behaviors and included sexual behaviors. This is the inside of the pamphlet, which focused primarily on the sexual behaviors. As you can see, they're very conservative norms, which we did purposely for this study. So just some demographics, there was 78 undergraduate students attending Penn State University Harrisburg. It was a convenient sample. 61 completed all the sessions. 17 participants didn't return for the third time. There's no differences between those who did and did not return. The average age was 22 years, with the majority female and the majority identified as Caucasian. Just an overall view of what was going on in the population. As you can see, a majority, or about 72%, report having engaged in vaginal sex. About 82% report having engaged in oral sex, including performing and receiving oral sex. And about 28% report engaging in anal sex. Now, perceptions were assessed 2 ways in this survey. The first way they were assessed is we asked a question, how much do you agree with the following statement? Most college students have had vaginal sex. And they just answer this on a Likert type scale. I strongly agree, I disagree. And what we found, just in general, is that students tended to agree that most college students have engaged in vaginal sex. Most college students have engaged in oral sex, including performing and receiving. However, when we look at anal sex, they disagree that most students have engaged in this behavior. The second way we looked at perception is we asked for percentage estimates. So what percent of your peers do you think have engaged in this behavior? And what we found is that they estimated about 73% of their peers had engaged in vaginal sex. About 63% had performed or received oral sex. About 21% had anal sex, and about 62% were using condoms. Okay, there we go. Now to look at the false consensus effect, which is really what we're looking at in this study and looking at, can we change these perceptions? Like I said, we assess perceptions in 2 ways, and it's a little bit confusing, so try to stay with me on this. The first way we assess this is level of agreement. How much do you agree with the following statement? Most students are engaging in vaginal sex. So at baseline, we found a significant group of differences, indicating that individuals who had engaged in the behavior were more likely to perceive that their peers were engaging in this behavior, as opposed to those who had not engaged in the behavior. And this occurred for anal sex, oral sex, including performing and receiving. However, after exposure to the normative feedback, significant group differences were not obtained for oral sex, performing, and receiving, showing that after they saw this normative feedback, something happened, their perceptions changed. At time three, we get kind of mixed results. We see that for some behaviors, significant group differences were obtained, so the false consensus effect came back. However, for some behaviors, we didn't obtain a false consensus effect. What's really great, and where we really get a clear picture of what's going on, is when we look at these percentage estimates. And what we find is that at baseline, significant group differences were obtained for vaginal sex, receiving oral, and performing oral sex, indicating that individuals who had engaged in these behaviors provided higher percentages regarding the number of peers engaging in the behavior. And this is what we would expect. However, after the normative feedback, we see there are no significant group differences for vaginal, receiving oral, and performing oral. And this is really great because it's showing that we were able to change these perceptions with just some simple normative feedback. What's even more exciting, actually, is that at time three or 2 weeks later, after this period, they haven't had the normative feedback for 2 weeks, and yet we still see the changes occurring. So we're able to change these perceptions even over a longer period of time. So that's a lot of information all at once. This chart kind of breaks it down and shows you where we saw the changes and where we didn't. And this was for the questions about level of agreement. And then when we look at percentage estimates, which I think gives us a kind of a clearer picture of what's going on. And we're finding that percentage estimates seem to be a better way to also convey information. It seems to stick in the head a little bit better, probably because it's a quantitative number they can actually look at and grasp and understand. So just to summarize the results, normative feedback is an effective strategy for changing perceptions with regards to risky sexual behaviors. This is a really exciting finding because it hasn't been shown to do this with sexual behaviors before and has only been applied to other behaviors such as illicit drug use and alcohol consumption. And specifically, we found that normative feedback was able to eradicate the false consensus effect. Normative feedback was most effective when considering percentage estimates, which is really good for us to know when we're thinking about prevention programming, what's the most effective way to communicate. There were, of course, worse limitations of the study. It was a pretty small sample size because it was a convenient sample. College students are a hard population when we're talking about asking questions about sexual behavior. The sample population itself was a wide range of ages because of the type of campus it was. So whether it can be generalized to other college populations is something we need to look at in the future. And the length of the study was only 2 weeks. It would be great to see a study over a year with multiple exposures to the normative feedback. Which brings me to our applications. Again, normative feedback is an effective strategy for changing behaviors, for changing perceptions, but what we need to know now is, can it change behaviors? Based on other research, we can assume that it will, but we really need to look at it and say, okay, if we can change the perceptions, will this allow us to change behaviors? So the future directions is we need to integrate normative feedback and prevention programming aimed at reducing risky sexual behaviors and see what happens over a longer period of time. And we need to apply this method to other populations, such as younger populations.